Hello and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I am your host, Ben Heckendorn, and we have a special guest this week.
And I'm Max Olmsted, videographer for the Ben Heck Show.
That's correct. So we talk about movies a lot behind the scenes in the Ben Heck Show. And one movie that we've talked about recently is Blade Runner 2049, which apparently is a masterpiece.
Yeah, I guess.
Right. So in this episode, we're going to discuss what we thought of Blade Runner 2049. And I guess I would say if you thought it was a masterpiece, you should probably stop listening right now.
Also, if you haven't seen Blade Runner,
2049.
Massive spoiler warning. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Both of them, because we'll probably spoil both of them.
Mm-hmm.
I like movies. I don't watch a lot of movies, but I consider myself a movie buff, kind of. And I've never quite understood the allure behind the original Blade Runner.
But can we call ourselves movie buffs if we don't like these two movies? And that's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, are there certain movies that you aren't allowed to dislike? Like, if you were like a movie buff and you're like, I hate Citizen Kane, like, what would happen? Would you be murdered?
Yeah, it's one of those faux pas opinions, I think, not to like Blade Runner.
I noticed, like, I really like Metropolis, but it seems like the more of it they find, the longer it gets and the less I enjoy it.
It's like the many cuts of Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, it's
like,
kind of
like I like the original. Because the extended version or whatever, there's a bunch of this extra stuff. And I'm like, I don't want all this. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, Raimi said the theatrical cut was the director's cut. So he just threw in whatever other crap he had laying around.
Right, and that's what it comes off as, too.
So there's a little known fact in the Ben Heck Show that all interviewees are asked their opinion of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2. So maybe we could both talk about, you know, the first Blade Runner, like when we've seen it, what we think about it, and then lead into the new one, which is apparently the greatest movie ever made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the buzz.
All right.
So my experience with the first Blade Runner, I saw it around 5 years ago or so, and I was expecting this huge masterpiece. Because I really like Ridley Scott, you know, Alien, and I really appreciate his work.
And what else?
And,
Legend,
you know, Robin Hood.
Oh God, he's a really
Exodus, Gods and Kings.
He's a very inconsistent director, but when he's good, he's good.
Yeah, that I would say.
I didn't.
I haven't been.
What was the movie where Matt Damon was on Mars?
The Martian? Yeah. That's one where I really enjoyed it as I was watching it. And then once it ended, I'm like, oh, he just got back to Earth.
Yeah.
Spoiler warning. Well, if anyone hasn't seen that movie, he gets back to Earth.
Well, just like Prometheus, it, you know, it's entertaining, but it doesn't hold up to any sort of, analysis. Unlike Alien Covenant, which was just garbage, you know, it didn't require any additional thought.
I was so mad when I left the theater after Alien Covenant.
Yeah,
it was insultingly stupid to me.
I watched it at home and I was like, my God, these scientists make the ones in Prometheus look like, you know, Nobel laureates. God, I probably saw Blade Runner in high school many years ago, probably on VHS. And then I've seen it a couple times over the years because, you know, back in the 90s is when people started to kind of rediscover it. So they started making the director's cuts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I've seen the different versions of it, you know, like the original theatrical with the bad voiceover and the, the director's cut and the final cut. And I guess I've probably seen all of them. And I've probably watched like maybe five times in my life.
I think I've only seen the director's cut. That's the one with the unicorn in the piano scene, right?
Yes, and the unicorn was leftover footage from Ridley Scott's movie Legend.
So, oh, yes, another classic.
Yeah. So he just took that footage and put it in. He's like, oh, I've got footage of a unicorn. I'll put it in this movie.
Such a weird choice to me. But
well, that's because there was unicorn origami, remember?
Yeah,
Admiral Adama made it, and that's because he knew that Deckard was a replicant.
You don't just take something from a movie that you've shot and then put it, transplant it into another one. I don't.
Well, Legend was a huge bomb.
George Lucas.
He had to get something out of it.
I suppose.
So anyway, you know, there's three movies I used to watch once every 5 years. It was because they're all movies that people like, but I didn't. It was Ghostbusters 2, Batman Returns, and Blade Runner, right? Yeah. So Ghostbusters 2, I think, is just garbage. You know, I've given up on that one. Batman Returns, I saw that in the theater because I, you know, I love the original Batman films. I saw that in the theater and I was like, meh. And I kind of appreciate it now as a – it's kind of a really cheesy, shoddily made movie. Like how badly made it is actually kind of enduring. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Blade Runner, I'm starting to appreciate it more, but I still – it's – I don't know. Maybe if I keep watching it and maybe by the time I'm 80, I'll think it's a masterpiece. Probably not.
Yeah, I've only seen it the once, so I barely remember it besides the final speech.
Oh, by Rucker but Howard.
I do remember the overall boredom that I experienced during the entirety of the film.
Yeah, so you know they talk about movies that bomb, even though they're great. The thing is, if you make a movie that's really boring, people won't go to it.
Yeah, I feel like movies should be entertaining.
There's no reason.
I mean, that's my view.
Yeah, you can make an entertaining movie, or you can make a deep movie, and it can still be entertaining.
Yeah,
it doesn't. You see people say, "Oh, the people who didn't like Blade Runner 2049 are Transformers fans." It's like, no. It's like it's almost like kind of like this like religious thing where it's like, "Oh, you don't like something that I like, therefore you are." You are a lesser movie person than me.
Therefore, your opinion is wrong. Yeah.
yeah. But I guess we are the Protestants of the movie church. And we're like, you know what? We're going to protest this movie because it's – I don't know. I guess we can just kind of get into Blade Runner 2049. So it was – you know, it was supposed to be the greatest movie ever made. The director has a really good pedigree, and it was just so long and boring.
Yeah, I feel like – every shot could have been cut down by a couple seconds. That's how I was feeling throughout. It got to the point where, you know, at the end where Ryan Gosling is sitting on the steps, I thought they might be just holding on that shot of him in the snow. And then I'm like, oh, then I realize, oh, he's dying. Oh, okay. That's what they're doing.
He was just dying very slowly.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we should warn people, massive spoilers for Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, I just ruined the ending. Ryan Gosling dies.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like they started making a good movie about, well, I don't know about a good movie, but, you know, kind of a somewhat interesting movie. Like, here's
it. It grows in how interesting it is until a point, and then they completely throw it all away in the end.
Basically, once Harrison Ford shows up, the whole movie grinds to a halt. See also Force Awakens.
Yes. Another example of that.
Because, okay, again, we're in major spoilers. So you've got Ryan Gosling, and he's trying to follow these clues, right? He's like, oh, bones, a replicant got pregnant. How?
And at the same time, he's slowly, very, very slowly walking around these beautiful environments and trying to figure out who he is.
I really think the movie moved that slowly so everyone could see how much they spent on the sets and environments. It was very masturbation-y. I mean,
the sets are beautiful. Like the production design and the sound design, amazing. It's just the story doesn't hold up.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, you know, they spent millions and millions of dollars on sets and like $10 on a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like the new one, it's building a story around the visuals. Like, oh, he has to go to a junkyard. He has to go to Las Vegas. He has to go to this water place, you know? Like, it feels like the story is being driven by, like, the things that he can see. And the original wasn't really like that. The original was visually striking, but it all fit the world. Whereas in this one, it just seems superfluous.
Yeah, the atmosphere is really nice. I will say that. But it's just – okay, so let's talk about the horsey scene.
Oh, so, the wooden horse he finds?
Yeah, so Ryan Gosling is looking for this kid who's the only replicant that was born.
From another replicant.
From another replicant, yes.
Yes.
And so he goes to this.
Oh, and we should point out, right in the first scene, they say Ryan Gosling's character is a replicant. You know, there's no mystery that he's a replicant hunting replicant.
Yes. So it makes sense. Our main character is the chosen one of the story. And it's another one of those chosen one storylines. And I accepted that. Like, and I was,
is he the replicant that was born from another replicant? Like, that's kind of what they, you know, they allude to.
That's what you're wondering. And they lead you to believe this whole chosen one kind of storyline. And so he has this memory that he assumes is implanted in his brain of these bullies chasing him and trying to take his toy horsey. And right. He hides it in this furnace, and then it stays there, and then he wanders off. And he assumes that's
planted. An abandoned inert furnace. Otherwise it would get burned
up. Otherwise it get burned up, you know, because it's wooden. So in his search for this replicant that was born, he goes to this child labor place where what are the children even doing? They're all these bald children making.
I think they were scrapping metal out of random bits of junk.
He goes to this child labor place,
it's a giant upside down satellite receiver dish. You know,
yeah.
This is in Junkyard San Diego, which is really visually striking.
And it's also a very Bug's Life situation where if these children chose to rise up, like there's only one warden.
Yeah.
So if they all attack this guy, he would have no chance. But anyway,
exactly.
That's beside the point.
He didn't have like any guards or anything?
Not that I saw. It was just this one guy in charge of all these children.
Yeah, they're all holding tools so they could stab him to death so quickly.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I feel like that would eventually happen.
But then would they wander outside and then die? I mean, where's the food? Maybe he's giving them food or something? And was
maybe
that
that's the incentive?
And he goes there looking for an orphanage. Like, was that the orphanage?
Like, so it's an orphanage, right? Where they put the orphans to work?
Yeah, it's like a Charles Dickens orphanage. I mean, so Harrison Ford's like, I took my kid for... Okay, so we'll just ruin the big twist. The big twist is that Harrison Ford and Sean Young's characters from the original had a baby, and it's like a human replicant baby, and Ryan Gosling is trying to find it. And then it's like, so apparently Deckard, put this baby in the child's forced slave labor camp to protect it. But remember,
that's the thing. He doesn't care about his daughter.
Yeah. But they even implied that the children would be sold off as sex slaves, possibly. It's like, is that really where you take your kid? Well, yeah, the guy alludes to it when he's like talking about, like, you know, you can buy the kid and use him for anything.
Okay, even if you don't care about a kid, you're still not going to put him in that environment.
Right.
Like, from Harrison Ford's perspective.
So Ryan Gosling goes down there and he starts wandering around, and then he finds this furnace and he recognizes it from his dreams or his memories. And he goes in and he finds the wooden horse that he remembers leaving there. So he's like, oh my God, my memory is real. Right. And that's in my opinion, that's like where the movie was the best, because it was like setting up a really interesting story. Yeah. Yeah. So then the question is like, oh, well, my memory is real, so why is that? So then he goes and he meets this woman who's like in this this hermetically sealed room, and her job is she makes memories for replicants. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I need you to analyze this memory in my replicant brain and tell me if it's did you create it, or is it based off a real memory? And then she's like, it's a real memory. And then he's like, thanks. And then he leaves. Spoiler warning, that girl is the one.
Yes, the girl is the chosen one, and they purposefully don't reveal that it's her memory. So she says it's a real memory, but she doesn't say, oh, that's my memory. Ryan Gosling leaves before this information can be dispensed.
Why would she? And she doesn't know she's a replicant either, or a replicant hybrid. She just is like sick or something. And I assume she's sick because she's not quite human or something, like some DNA flaw. I don't know.
I mean, that's the other thing. We don't get any time with this character, so we don't really know much about her. So when there's this big reveal at the end, it doesn't really have any emotional impact, at least for me.
Well,
it didn't.
And you, And when they flash back to it, like when Ryan Gosling realizes that she's, you know, the replicant daughter, they have to actually flash back to footage of her so you remember her, which tells you that character did not make an impact. Otherwise, they wouldn't have had to do a you know, visual flashback.
Right.
But so, you know, the story is kind of interesting. But then he's like, I'm going to go to Las Vegas. And Las Vegas is like radioactive or something for some reason. And he's like – and he goes there because he's trying to find Deckard. Now, if you remember the original movie, Deckard as a character is completely lame. He's boring. he's wimpy. He sucks, right?
So, but apparently in his old age, he's become old man Harrison Ford in this
right, universe. Harrison Ford – he doesn't actually play characters anymore. He just shows up on set and is old man Harrison Ford.
He's yeah, like, there's actually
there's I'm a part Solo. Where
he throws his whiskey on the ground for his dog. Like, that's not a Deckard thing to do. That's an old man Harrison Ford thing to do.
Yeah, Deckard would have drank that whiskey because he was like a drunk. But anyway, Deckard completely sucks. So it's like, why do we care? Like, Han Solo at least is cool. You know, it's like, oh, cool. It's Han Solo, even though he's old. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't care about old Deckard. It's like, who cares? But the thing is, so – it's not – I didn't think it was that great anyway. But then once Harrison Ford shows up, everything about Ryan Gosling's character is thrown out the window. Like, his character art is done as soon as Ford shows up.
Because up until that point, they're building up Ryan Gosling's character. And in the horse scene, it's the peak interesting part of the movie. However, it's still – I'm only mildly interested. I'm like, this could get good.
Yes, but it's not yes, that's how I felt. Yet. Yes. Well, what about – they also spent quite a lot of time on Ryan Gosling is a artificial person, and he has a artificial girlfriend who's like a hologram or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They spent quite a bit – I mean, that was kind of interesting, you know?
It was visually very interesting, and the concept was cool, but then they don't do anything with it because the movie doesn't turn out to be about Ryan Gosling at the end.
Yes, it just I mean, why didn't they just end the movie before Harrison Ford showed up? Then the movie also would have been like normal length instead of what 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Because they established this hologram character, I think, so that you feel something when she dies, but then they don't kill her for any reason. That's the problem I had with it.
Yeah, because I guess we should say there's a. It kind of has a Force Awakens problem,
mm-hmm.
besides Harrison Ford, where it's 30 years later, but nothing has changed. Just like in Force Awakens, it's like the Empire was defeated, but now there's the First Order.
And but there's a new thing.
Yeah, and the Senate was rebuilt, but we still need a resistance for some dumb reason. Or like in this one, it's like the Tyrell Corporation, who made the original replicants, went out of business. But then this new corporation came in, bought the assets, and is making replicants again. So nothing changed. I mean, there's... Right? Nothing has changed. I mean, apparently the environment is worse. That's about it. So, like, the fact that 30 years has passed has no effect on the story.
Mm-hmm. And then there's all these scenes establishing Jared Leto's character as a villain.
Who is the CEO of the new evil company.
CEO of the new evil company. And he's apparently blind, but he has these flying drone eyes that connect via USB into his neck.
Right. So he owns an eyeball factory for making replicants, but he's blind by choice, I guess.
Maybe the sight from the drone eyes is so good that it's better than if he would replace his eyes with replicant eyes.
Yeah, you know what he could do? Like, he could be getting his hair cut and just have one of the drones go around the back of his head, and he could see how it looks. He wouldn't even need the mirror.
Oh,
think of how much time that would save you.
That's probably the motivation behind the whole eye thing.
Oh my god. Right. Yeah, but the thing is,
also another thing, the lighting in his headquarters is the most obnoxious thing possible. So it's like this yellow
water everywhere.
Yeah, shot through a fish tank or something. So it's always just undulating.
Like, Ridley Scott has like detailed sets, and like the cinematography was good in this movie, but the sets actually weren't that interesting. A lot of it was like just, like you said, like an empty room, but they have a weird shimmering water effect on it, which makes it look interesting. Otherwise, it's just like an empty room with angular walls.
Yeah, it kind of looked like some kind of platforming game where you're not supposed to step in the water.
Well, yeah, kind of like an N64 game.
Yeah, so there's like a path, like probably made of stone or something, and there's water surrounding it. So each room has like a moat.
Yeah,
which is extremely complicated.
Really, really good for getting work done. You know what else is good for work done? Like you have areas that are completely filled with undulating, bright, reflective light, then other areas that are completely bright with completely dark portions, so people can come in and out of shadow. Because that's what you need in an office building.
That's what you want. It's like, you don't want to expect who's coming in.
Brian Gosling's like, I must find Deckard because he's super important. So he goes to Vegas, he finds Deckard. Then they have this stupid fight scene in like this hologram room.
And they're punching each other for like 20 minutes for no reason.
Yeah, also apparently Ryan Gosling is a super soldier. He's like really tough.
Mm-hmm. I guess. They can go through walls.
I was reading about that hologram scene. Apparently they had far more holograms than they actually showed, and they actually paired it back in editing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so it was even
There's
more.
There's already so many.
Yeah. Okay, so Blade – I actually have the numbers right here. Okay, so the original Blade Runner, it made – well, with re-releases, $32 million, which is, you know, not very good. Now, if you take inflation adjusted, that gets you to about $83 million today, although I think movie tickets are actually inflated faster than actual money, but whatever. So the new Blade Runner has made $85 million domestic, right? So
yeah.
About the same as the original, right?
Yeah.
And so here's the thing. You see so many articles where they talk about, you know, why didn't this movie do better? You know, was it because, you know, people are dumb or Transformers or like I've seen articles where they said there's too much nudity in it. It's like, no, it's because the average person does not give a fuck about Blade Runner. That's it.
Yeah, it's all movie buffs who like the original.
Nobody remembers it. It's not like A Wonderful Life or Wizard of Oz or Shawshank Redemption, like, you know, movies that flopped but became loved over time by the general public. It's a niche film, like The Disaster Artist. I mean, I'm gonna go see that, but it's not gonna make any money.
It's a very niche group.
Yeah.
And on top of that, movie buffs don't want to see a sequel to Blade Runner.
Although apparently they all love it.
I guess. Yeah.
But yeah, the dumb movie public, you know, they would accept an unnecessary sequel, but they don't care about Blade Runner in the first place. But the people who do care about Blade Runner are the kind of people who wouldn't want an unnecessary sequel, even though they all loved it. So, I guess it's really lucky that they all loved it, because it would have done even worse. You know, like all these unnecessary sequels or reboots that nobody cares about, you know, so many years later. I guess the thing is, I think it did pretty well for what it was. They just spent too much money on it. That's why I brought this up, because of the hologram fight. There's just so much waste in this movie.
There's a lot of just time spent on the visuals. I mean, it's beautiful, but a lot of it is unnecessary, especially when Ryan Gosling is walking through these naked statues in Vegas.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
Yeah, it's like first – he's like, oh, I'm going to go into Vegas. So they have a scene very much like the infamous, you know, photo analysis scene in the original, where he's telling his drone how to walk around, you know, where to go in Vegas, which is kind of stupid, because in an earlier scene, he can wave his fingers and his drone knows exactly what he means. Remember that? Mm-hmm. In the first scene? So anyway, so then he starts to go into Vegas, and Vegas is all in these hues of red and, you know, shades of orange. And they just have like these, I don't know, like 30-foot tall statues of naked women. And he just slowly walks through them with his gun drawn. Well, that's every scene in this movie. And it's like, how much did it cost to build those things? What do they have to do with the plot? We know Vegas is about hedonism. Who cares? You know, this is redundant, right? And then he walks past some beehives. So that makes sense. Like, you know, Harrison Ford was eating bees or something.
So much of it is Ryan Gosling walking through these environments, and he kind of looks like an old video game character where his legs are moving, but his torso isn't.
Well, he's walking so slowly. I mean, his torso doesn't need to move.
Incredibly slowly.
Yeah, even like when he gets to the casino or wherever that Harrison Ford is holed up in, like he walks through it for like, what, 5 minutes? It's like, ooh, look at all the furniture and look at all this. And oh, this is really cool. And
it should be called Blade Wanderer.
Yeah. Blade Stroller.
Blade Walker.
But then he starts fighting Harrison Ford, and they go into like this other part of the casino, and there's all these holograms, and there's like a hologram of Marilyn Monroe, and there's a hologram of Elvis. And it's like, how much did they spend on this? And what is the point? So they could play, "We Can't Go On Together with Suspicious Eyes." It's like, oh, I get it. They're suspicious of each other. I mean,
yeah. And so Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling are fighting for a bit, and then suddenly they become friends, and a little time passes, and then Harrison Ford is like, "Oh, you fool, Ryan Gosling. You led them right to us."
Of course.
And then, so there's this Terminator woman.
Oh, yes. She sucked. Okay, so you know in the original how it had Rucker Howard and he was like saying like cheesy operatic things, but he was interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in this movie you have,
silent Terminator woman.
Yeah, so she's a replicant. She's like the henchwoman of Jared Leto for the corporation.
She's also trying to find this replicant who was born so that Jared Leto can figure out how to make replicants that birth other replicants for some reason.
Yeah, I guess maybe to save money, but it also seems like a way to completely lose control of the replicants. And then he's like...
Yeah, because also the main replicant was kind of crazy, the one who was making the memories. So why would you want to create a bunch of uncontrollable robots?
Yeah, and there's also like a replicant resistance in this movie, which is barely touched upon. It probably was a complete waste of time. But he actively wanted to make humans extinct. It's like it didn't really make any sense.
Yeah, so the resistance scene is supposed to be this big turning point in the movie.
We should say Terminator Woman attacks the casino, and they take Harrison Ford, even though he has no knowledge of where his daughter is, and they leave Ryan Gosling alive, even though he knows where she is. Makes no sense. Right. And then they smash his electronic girlfriend device, and then the resistance picks him up.
Right. So the resistance picks Ryan Gosling up after he's kind of knocked unconscious, and then he wakes up, sees the resistance, and they're like, "Hi, we're the resistance. We're all replicants. Also, by the way, you're not the chosen one. And the chosen one was a girl." And then Ryan Gosling has this moment of sadness. He's like, "Oh, I wasn't the chosen one." And then the resistance says, "Oh, it's so human that you would think you're the main character in your own story. That you would hope that."
Yes.
And that is a good philosophical point. But for a movie, your main character should be the chosen one.
Yes.
So it deflates everything that you've established previously. We've been following Ryan Gosling and getting invested in this character and his journey.
Yeah.
And then they're just like, "Oh, he's boring. He's meaningless. He's kind of a red herring."
Right. Even though he was the main character, and he is the main character for the whole movie, and yeah, it just feels like a waste. And then they have to flashback. It's like, oh, even I still don't understand how he knew that the girl was actually the chosen one, or not even really the chosen one, just like the replicant. Like, how did he figure that out?
So in that scene where he brings the memory to the girl and she says, "Oh, no, I didn't make this. This was a real memory." She knew that it was her memory, but Ryan Gosling left before she could say that. So then in the part where the resistance tells Ryan Gosling that he's not the chosen one and it was a girl, he thinks, "Oh, okay, so my memory that was real is this girl's memory."
And that memory took place to where the orphan was dropped off. That's still kind of a stretch.
It's a bit of a stretch, yeah.
It would have been a lot easier to have him be the chosen one.
I think that was the idea. Yeah, also... So that's – it's just they spent so much time on Ryan Gosling's character, and then they just throw it out by saying he's not important.
I was just trying to see how old Ryan Gosling was, so I wondered if that had something to do with it. Because you remember the chosen one would have to be like 29, I think, right?
Right.
And then he's 36, which he could – you know, it's in the ballpark.
It's possible. He's still – could have been the chosen one.
Right, right.
So it reminded me of, like in Wonder Woman, where they have all these scenes with Poison Woman and that other German guy.
Oh yeah.
And then in the end, they turned out to be the red herring villains.
Right.
It was kind of like that, except instead of having these ancillary characters that are useless, you have the main character whose story now doesn't matter at all. And so why have we been watching him for 2 hours?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a lot more enjoyable if it was him, because why do we care about this random woman who's in like 1 5-minute scene? You know, like,
yeah,
there's no investment with her. But like, the point of a movie is you invest the audience in the main character so that you care about the outcome that affects this character, and that you can feel satisfied watching them overcome adversity. And yeah. But that none of that matters, because the Chosen One character is just this woman who basically is trapped inside of a sealed room because of some sort of disease or something. And yeah, it's like they tried to make it a twist that he wasn't the Chosen One, but that's the wrong twist to make.
Yeah, the twist deflated the narrative. It felt like they were working back from the twist. They're like, yes. Oh, we have this twist, so we have to withhold all this information, and then also we're focusing on the wrong character the entire time.
Yes. And then the girl doesn't know she's a replicant, so why does she withhold certain information? Like, she doesn't know anything. And Harrison Ford doesn't
really
know either.
Really, and that scene with the memory, she would just say, "That's my memory." And then we skip so much of the movie.
Yes.
Getting to her being the Chosen One.
Because the plot is, at the end of Blade Runner, Harrison Ford and Sean Young run away. Apparently, she gets pregnant. She has a baby, and then she dies in childbirth or something, I think, or something. She dies. Yeah. And so Harrison Ford, to protect the baby, he like puts it into a slave labor orphanage camp.
I guess to protect the baby. And then he goes hides out in Vegas.
Yeah. Wouldn't it make more sense for him to protect her by having her with him, or would that make it too obvious who it was? I mean, that's like Rogue One, Saw Gerrera. It's like, I'm going to protect your daughter by abandoning her as a teenager.
Also, I don't care about my own life. I'm just going to sit here and die while this planet disintegrates.
Neither did Jyn Erso's mom. She's like, oh, let's see. Oh, 6 stormtroopers. I can take them. Let's see.
Yeah, sure. My daughter doesn't need a mother. That's fine.
Engage in a battle I can't win, or protect my daughter. It's like, who wrote that movie? Like, do they actually – have they ever met a mother in their lives? Rogue One, I mean.
Oh, God.
Anyway, that's off subject. But yeah, but it's the same kind of thing where it just it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. In order for there to be a plot – they have stupid decisions made, you know? Like, the plot – yeah.
Yeah, like, the red herring character should not be the main character. That's not interesting. Because ultimately, the red herring is the red herring,
right.
And then we move on to our normal characters.
Well, like, in The Matrix, you know, they think he is the one, but then he has self-doubt about being the one. And then through his actions, he realizes that he is the one. And that's interesting because it's like, oh, maybe he's not. Oh, but he is. And it's satisfying. You know, there's like some doubt there. And this is like kind of the opposite. It just, yeah. And
yeah, it's like, I'm not the chosen one. Oh, and then we're all just left deflated. And then you think, and then I was kind of wondering where they were going to go from that. So you have this resistance scene where we figure out that Ryan Gosling is not important. And then I'm like, okay. Where are they going to go from here? Then Ryan Gosling takes Harrison Ford to Memory Girl's headquarters, which is this giant building.
This is at the very end of the movie.
At the very end of the movie.
Yes. I mean, you're leaving out the scene where Jared Leto was like, tell me where your daughter is, Harrison Ford, so I can take her apart and figure out pregnancy. And Harrison Ford doesn't actually know where she is. He abandoned her to keep her safe. He basically says that. So Jared Leto is, you know, basically they leave behind Ryan Gosling They leave him for dead, even though he has the information they need. And Terminator Woman knows he's been doing all the searching. She knows that he has a lot of information, and she so doesn't make sense to leave him alive if they want to cover their tracks. And then it doesn't make sense to leave him behind because he might know something, right?
It was like in Batman and Robin where Mr. Freeze says, "I'll kill you next time," and that clearly looped in line.
Yeah. Another thing, remember that right before they get captured, Harrison Ford goes through that door and he locks it behind him, and then Ryan Gosling, because he's a replicant apparently, smashes through a brick wall. He's like, "Ha ha, you can't lock me out." And I was thinking about that. I was like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like replicants are basically artificial humans, right?
Yeah.
They're not Terminators with like metal endoskeletons that weigh a ton underneath. It's like, how would a flesh and blood, an artificial flesh and blood person go through a wall like that? It doesn't make any sense. There's not enough mass.
Yeah, because when Ryan Gosling gets punched in that movie, he bleeds. So if a punch can hurt him, going through a wall is going to kill him. It's going to break his entire body.
Well, but apparently he's like pretty strong because he gets punched and stabbed and I mean, he gets the shit kicked out of him, but he keeps living.
He keeps going.
Even we're just talking about mass. Like, it's like if I took a baseball and threw it against drywall, it's not going to go through. Well, it might if you know, if strong enough. But yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I guess if you fired a human being out of a supersonic cannon into a brick wall, they might break it, but they would also look like spaghetti when they came out the other side.
Yeah.
It just didn't make any sense. Well, anyway, so they're like, well, if we take Harrison Ford off planet, we have the tools so we can read his brain. Why they don't have those things on Earth, I couldn't tell you. it's just so that they can fly him to the airport. So Ryan Gosling, who apparently has now missile launchers on his car, can like intercept, and they can have this stupid 20-minute punching scene in the rain in the water.
Yeah. So Terminator Woman captures Harrison Ford, and then there's this whole interrogation scene. We didn't talk about the Sean Young part.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We should go back to that.
Yeah, so after they capture Harrison Ford and before they take him off the planet, they're like, "I know you don't like pleasure, but wait, it's like, I know you like pain, but what about pleasure?" I can't remember. So
something like that.
Out walks this really expensive-looking CGI reproduction of 22-year-old Sean Young from the original Blade Runner.
And you would think, if they're recreating her digitally, Sean Young's dead, right?
The actress?
Wrong.
No. Yeah, she's not that old either. I mean, so I invite anyone listening to this podcast, or maybe I can just include it on my webpage, Google a picture of Sean Young. I mean, she looks like a 50-something version of Sean Young. You know,
she doesn't look that bad. She looks a hell of a lot better than Harrison Ford.
Right, but it's like why not? And they had her on set coaching the person with dots all over her face. It's like, why not just fucking hire Sean Young? How much does it cost to fire? You could probably get her for like $50,000, right? Instead, how much did they spend on that CGI? Probably millions.
Also, that's so insulting. You have Sean Young in the room, and then Harrison Ford's in the movie, and then there's this stand-in for you because you're a woman, you have to be made younger.
Yes, let me look this up. How Sean Young? Sean Young is 57. Yeah, so why not just hire her? So think about it. So instead of having like a 75-year-old man and a 57-year-old woman, which is already weird. You've got a 75-year-old man and a 22-year-old woman, which is like Hugh Hefner level bullshit.
Yeah, I'm not an activist by any means, but if you think about it, this movie, all the main characters are white, all the ancillary characters, the minority, all of the people Ryan Gosling talks to are minorities, and then also there's all this like over-sexualized Vegas bullshit, and then you have the Sean Young thing. So it's just the cherry on top.
Also, what happened to all the Asians? Like in the original Blade Runner, it was like everyone was Asian, and now they're all gone. Did they go off world? Because I think this is like 30 years from Blade Runner, 2019. So it's not 2049 from our timeline. It's 2049 from the original's timeline.
Okay. Very confusing.
Well, like, the video game series Fallout.
Yeah.
That's based off a timeline where the solid state transistor was not invented in the 1950s. Right. And so like the 1950s vacuum tube technology continued on into like the year 2077. Right. So yeah. Fallout's not our future. It's an alternate future. Whereas yes. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
In the you think about it, Blade Runner was in 2019, right? And people were reading newspapers, and they were smoking in bars in Los Angeles, and you know all the stuff that's just completely inaccurate to our current time. So, it's the future as told by the past. That still doesn't excuse the. But think again. They spent $150 million in this movie, which was too much. It's just spent like $80, you know.
Yeah.
And just stuff like a CGI Sean Young, pointless. Like Elvis writes, Marilyn Monroe writes. What was it? Someone else was in there, like Frank Sinatra, I think, as a hologram.
Pointless. And apparently there were more holograms that they had to pay for but didn't use.
Yeah, yeah. Apparently there's this huge sequence they shot, and very little of it got used. They're like, oh, it'd be spookier if there was just a few holograms. And Deckard, who apparently is a technology expert as well, he's got all these sensors set up, and they're like, oh no, someone's followed you here.
Oh, right, right. And then Terminator Woman, and then this other guy and Ryan Gosling are running through walls. And
yes. And okay. Ryan Gosling, he's pretty tough. He can kick a lot of ass. And apparently he can be stabbed many times. So after they tempt Harrison Ford, also Edward James Olmos was in it, which I kind of liked. No, no. They're like, here's a fake Sean Young. Now will you tell us? And then he's like, her eyes are the wrong color. And then they're like, oh, crap. And then they just shoot her. It's like, what a waste. It's like, she could be like a airline pilot or something, or work at Starbucks. It's like,
yeah, they had to have put a lot of work into that model.
Yeah.
It's a shame just shooting it in the head.
Oh, what about the scene where, we know what you like. Before Digital Sean Young comes out, they play – it's that stupid shit where it's like they take audio from the original movie and say it was a recording that somebody recorded. So it's like the scene where he's like, nice owl. Is it artificial? Of course it is. You know, like basically him meeting Rachel. And that's my other problem. He had no chemistry with her in the original movie. Like it was like a creepy stalker romance at best. Not even really, because that would involve Harrison Ford appearing to want her, you know. Mm-hmm. But they make their quote unquote romance from the original movie like this romance for the ages that's super important, you know.
And yeah.
There was nothing there, so it's like, oh, here's an audio recording of you meeting Sean Young's character, and it's like, who gives a shit? You know,
I mean, that's what the whole interrogation scene revolves around, is revealing that. And I guess that was the point of Jared Leto's character, is to bring that in, because he never comes up again.
Who doesn't? Jared Leto?
Jared Leto. Yeah.
Well, he stabs a naked replicant in the uterus for some reason.
In the uterus, I guess, because he's mad that he can't make a replicant. That
I didn't even realize that until I read children. It. I read it in reviews. I'm like, that's what he did? Like, why?
Yeah, I don't really understand the reason for the scene, but I got that it was the uterus for some reason. Because of his motivation, I don't know.
Yeah, he's like, I wish my replicants could fuck each other and make more replicants. Then I could save so much money. He doesn't say that, but I guess that was his plan.
But why does he care about that? Okay, so if you make a replicant and then it can now make more replicants, aren't you making your company irrelevant? Because then they can become self-sufficient and create themselves?
Well, maybe there would be a reproduction licensing fee.
For the replicants? I mean, do the replicants pay
for
things?
You're right, it doesn't make any financial sense. I mean, because if you look at like slavery, like if a Roman had two Christian slaves and they had a kid, that kid would be their slave as well.
Right, but in this case, if they had a baby, Jared Leto would have no control over that thing. So,
yeah,
where's the profit?
It doesn't make any sense.
That's his whole plan.
It goes back to the whole plot revolves around how do we involve Deckard and Rachel. It's like, oh, well, they could fuck. They could have a kid. Oh, yeah, it's the first replicant. Like, brilliant. Everything was reverse engineered from that. So instead of telling a better story about replicants or artificiality or what it is to be human, they have to revolve everything around these boring as hell original characters.
Yeah, because the Ryan Gosling storyline could have gone in many interesting directions, but it's completely derailed, as you said, by Harrison Ford when he pops up in Vegas. It's just like, oh, everything's about Harrison Ford now.
Yeah, even though, you know, what Jared Leto wants is like, I want the child. I want the replicant hybrid child. And you're going to tell me where she is. And Harrison Ford won't, and he can't because he doesn't know.
Won't and can't, right. And so he sends them off to wherever they can extract the memories because they can't do it there.
They're flying him to the airport so they can take him off the planet or something. So then that's when Ryan Gosling comes back. So apparently he has his car now and it can shoot missiles. And he shoots missiles at the bad guy's car. It crashes and then he lands and he shoots like 3 bullets. And he's like, well, I give up with my gun. I'm going to just go punch people now. And then he has this stupidly long fight, like in the ocean waves with the female Terminator replicant.
Yeah, so Ryan Gosling is fighting female Terminator while Harrison Ford is in Terminator Woman's ship and it's sinking into the sea and Harrison Ford is almost drowning and Ryan Gosling has to try and save him. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, why is this so boring? Because it seems like it should be an amazing scene.
Yeah, it cuts back to him in his handcuffs, you know, just sitting there unable to do anything. And it's like watching your grandpa and he can't come to the Thanksgiving table because no one will move his wheelchair closer to it.
Yeah, and so I started thinking it's because there's no stakes. It's like, okay, what happens if Terminator Woman wins? Harrison Ford gets taken to this memory extraction planet to get information that he doesn't know. So right. Jared Leto can't possibly find this born replicant.
Exactly.
Because Harrison Ford doesn't have the information. The only reason Ryan Gosling found it is because he had that horse memory and he found the horse.
Because of a coincidence.
Yes. Because originally when Ryan Gosling goes to that, child labor place, he finds the pages ripped out where the record of the child would have been. So Harrison Ford rips those pages out.
So even if Jared Leto had followed the cookie crumbs that far, he wouldn't have gotten any further because he doesn't know about the memories. Although he should, though, as his own company.
Exactly.
Actually, the woman's his employee. She works for the replicant company. Terminator Woman, she wants to take Harrison Ford off the planet, and then she wants to kill Ryan Gosling. So if Harrison Ford dies, Jared Leto loses. If Ryan Gosling dies, it doesn't matter actually at all. It's more important that he stays alive, but she's trying to kill Ryan Gosling. And then in the end, he finally chokes her or something. It just took forever.
I guess.
I've seen reviews and they're like, oh, it's so awesome. It's just a fight scene with nothing but blackness and the crashing waves. It's like, it was boring.
It's pretty, but it's terribly boring.
So then he's like, well, let's get out of here. You know, so Ryan Gosling is still somehow alive, even though he's been stabbed and poked and beat up. So he flies Harrison Ford.
If Ryan Gosling wins, which he does, that's the other part of the fight. Why do we care? Like, where is he taking Harrison Ford? Like, what does it have to do with the storyline?
You know, it would have been better. You saw Looper, right?
Yeah.
You know how at the end, like, he realizes that, you know, he's the villain? And he's like, oh, the way that I can do the right thing is to kill myself.
Yeah.
Remember? And it kind of needed something like that. Like, if Harrison Ford was dead, she'd be safe. If Ryan Gosling was dead, she'd be safe. But no, they both fly back in the car and they go to see her again. So he's like, I'm going to take you to see your daughter, right?
Right.
So the thing that one has to realize is like, Jared Leto is still alive. He still has this giant company. You killed one of his replicants. Oh no. It's like he doesn't have any other replicants that could act as like foot soldiers. And so what happens? Like it ends with like Harrison Ford's like, it's my daughter. And he like puts a hand on the glass. And then it's like, okay, so does he take her away and do they go back into hiding? Does he walk away? Like, you know, what is the end game there?
Yeah, so Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling go to Memory Woman's memory creation building.
Yes.
And
which is owned by the villain Jared Leto, because she works for the villain.
Owned by the villain Jared Leto.
Yeah, Jared Leto isn't even really that much of a villain. I mean, I guess he is, but...
Yeah, he's established as the villain, and then he doesn't really do anything villainous.
I mean, Terminator Woman kills a couple people, right? She kills... she kills Princess Bride, and then she kills that other guy. Yeah. Kind of needlessly, too.
Yeah, because Terminator Woman is also trying to find the child throughout the movie for Jared Leto's purposes, which is to, you know, create robots that can create other robots through procreation for some reason.
Yeah. Although you'd think the bones and DNA remains of Rachel would be more useful to that. Actually, well, and she does steal those, so.
Yeah,
but it's just at the end, he like, oh, here's your daughter, and then that's kind of the end. But
yeah. So at the end, we're outside this memory building, and Ryan Gosling's like, hey, Harrison Ford, you should go in and see your daughter, have a private moment with her. And then it's snowing. Harrison Ford goes into the building. Ryan Gosling sits down on the steps, and that's when I thought they were just hanging on Ryan Gosling for no reason.
Right.
And then he's dying, apparently.
But no blood was coming out of him. I mean, why? If you really wanted us to sell that he's dying, unless they're trying to be ambiguous, like, well, you know, what they usually do, like, have some blood pool up under him. I mean, he has blood in him.
Yeah.
Oh, did you catch that awesome thing?
What?
So you know how the girl is surrounded by holograms, you know, in her room, right?
Yeah,
so she like creates, like, when you first see her, she's like in a forest, and then we see the forest as a hologram, and then she just made it, and then she creates a hologram for birthday party. So at the very end, like one of the last shots is she's in there, and there's like fake holographic snow falling, and she holds out her hand, and the snow is going through her hand because it's not real. And then you see Ryan Gosling outside, and there's snow falling. He holds out his hand, and he can feel the snow because it's real. So he's fake, but the snow is real, and she's real, but she can't feel this fake snow. That's really artistic.
That I did not catch.
That
at all
was in there.
Okay.
But apparently this movie is super deep, and I didn't see any depth to it whatsoever. I mean, everything was completely on the surface. I mean, I don't understand where all the subtext was.
There weren't that many plot points, and it was slow. I guess that's...
It seems like there's been so many other works of fiction in TV and movies that have explored these concepts better than the original Blade Runner has, and better than this movie has.
Like, Ex Machina is a very good example. Like, it's deliberate in its pace, and
there's a ton of...
Yeah. And the ideas in it are very well explored, whereas in Blade Runner, I don't think they were at all.
Well, I think it's important, you know, if you're doing a movie like that, you should just explore like one idea, you know?
Yeah.
And this one kind of explored a lot of ideas, but didn't really flesh out any of them.
Yeah, it was kind of two incomplete stories that were both boring.
Yes.
Kind of how I felt about it. Because there's the Ryan Gosling story, and then that turns out to be useless. And then there's the Harrison Ford story, which I also don't care about.
So I think, again, like I said, the amount of money this movie made, if you take inflation into account, it's about the same as the original. So you have a finite number of people that care about Blade Runner, and it's never going to be mass market, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, still, all things considered, it did pretty well. But there's another movie that... Interstellar, right?
Yeah.
That one did better than I would have thought, you know? Like, of course, I saw that opening weekend because I love space movies. Like, oh, a Christopher Nolan space movie, I'm in.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of stuff in it that kind of, you know, things that were kind of Blade Runner-ish, you know, like not really mass market. But even though it did have an emotional core, even though it was kind of ridiculous, like how much he didn't care about his son. All he cared about was his daughter, Jessica Chastain. Yeah. But at least it was there. And I think that's what was really missing from this movie. I mean, you know, it looked really cool. It had great production design. I mean, it was too long, but there was no emotional core. And there could have been. There could have been a core with Ryan Gosling and perhaps his digital girlfriend or something. Like, maybe – but there wasn't. Maybe it's like Ryan Gosling is maybe he's a normal person, right? And he has a digital girlfriend and he wants to make her real. And so he's like, oh, I could put her into a replicant. And it's like, oh man, replicants, they've been illegal for 30 years. You'll never find one. And then he kind of goes into the world and tries to do that. And I don't know. There was just no emotional core because it was impossible to care about any of the characters because everything was undercooked. And yeah. And even if you cared about Ryan Gosling's fake memory arc, the way he portrayed his character was, again, completely boring. And I don't think it's not – I mean, there's movies like The Nice Guys where, I mean, he could be a, you know, engaging, he could be really funny charismatic actor.
Yeah.
Right. But in this one, he was just like a lump of wood.
Like his wooden horse.
Ah,
yes, yes. And then also, I mean, you could have had – a different movie without Harrison Ford or any of that storyline and had Ryan Gosling continuing on this quest to find the Chosen One. And then he could still find out he's the Chosen One, but then he maybe stays the Chosen One and we're invested in that story. And then
he has to make a choice based off of it. Like, oh, you know, do I want to stay as a replicant hunter or should I, you know, join the resistance?
Yeah, like he could figure out that his job as a replicant hunter is against his own interests, and then he has to fight against that, and then Robin Wright becomes the villain. Yeah. That could be another.
See, I really thought the twist in this movie was going to be that he's hunting replicants, but actually he's hunting down the last remaining humans because replicants have pretty much taken over.
Mm-hmm.
You watched Black Mirror, right?
Yeah.
You know that one where the soldiers are kind of like brainwashed via computer to like think that homeless people are monsters, so they're killing them.
Right. Yeah.
It's something like that, where like you can have the twist also. The twist could have some sort of moral implication, like, oh, look, you know, humans went extinct, and you know, the only people that can survive in this ruined planet are the replicants, and so we're trying to get rid of the last of the humans because they destroyed our world. You know, you can make some sort of statement like that, but I was expecting something like that, but then we didn't get anything. Again, it was like it's 30 years later, nothing has changed. I mean, I guess the weather's worse. But that's about it.
The twist should add meaning to what you've already saw rather than completely discount it.
Yes, yes,
which is
exactly
what happened.
Yes. Very, very well put.
And then in the end part where – so we end on this supposedly emotional note of Harrison Ford and his daughter, and they meet. But then why do we care about that? Like it seems to end in a place that doesn't tie up the things that they've established.
Well, again, like if she was the main character, or if the Chosen One was the main character, you could have them. There could be an empty place in their life because they never knew their parent. You know, you could make that a major theme, or you could. Like with Star Wars, is like, you know, Luke is an orphan, but it turns out his father is the villain. So by figuring out who his family is, you know, also, you know, brings him into other conflict in the main part of the story. But yeah, you have.
Yeah.
Deckard, who no one cares about, and you've got this random woman in a bubble who no one cares about, and who cares?
Yeah.
I mean,
it could have meant something if we were following this memory character throughout the entire thing, but we weren't. So it's just these two characters that we barely know. I mean, Deckard we obviously know from the other movie and then half of this one, but we don't really care. And then also Harrison Ford doesn't seem to care about his own daughter. Like, we don't establish a connection between them either.
He says that, you know, sometimes caring is, you know, abandoning them or something or some such rubbish.
Sometimes caring is leaving your child in a labor force.
He basically says that. Right. So, like, just because it's, you know, Blade Runner doesn't mean it has to be completely cold and sterile. They could have found a way to add something and they didn't really bother. They're like, oh, well, people love the original, even though it's kind of cold and sterile. So let's just make the same thing, even though they could add that. And then you see it a lot of times where like, oh, you know, this is an unnecessary romance subplot or this is an unnecessary, you know, character or whatever. And it's like, you know, no, like sometimes you need to put that in order to make it function as a movie. You know, like my big thing, like I wish they would have kissed at the end of Rogue One. I still hold to that. Like, just give them something, you know, like, look, they're losing something, you know, they're losing, you know, the ability to love. It's like, or like Titanic. It's like, I'll never let go, Jack. It's like, oh no, there goes the only man she ever loved and he's frozen, you know, and you know, those movies make billions of dollars and this one doesn't.
Yeah. At least tie up the loose ends that you've established. Like they have all these scenes with Jared Leto and then he doesn't come back at the end.
Right.
Like I was expecting Harrison Ford and Ryan Gosling to get back to that place and Jared Leto's already there and maybe he's found out about this chosen one somehow and then they have to save her or something.
That would have made more sense because they could be taking her off planet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have made a lot more sense.
But then you're just left with this weird moment and then it ends. And I'm left completely unsatisfied.
Yeah, like, so if it was like, well, even then, would you really care that much about this person? I mean, I guess you might care more about it because it's like a young woman instead of like an old man. But at least it would have made some sense. Like, there would have been risk, you know, like, oh, you know, they've got your daughter, you know, it would be interesting.
Yeah, because we have this piece of information that this daughter is the chosen one, and then nothing is done with it.
If you think about
that
it, like,
character doesn't do anything.
Like, let's say it was the movie Taken, right? And they're like, Liam Neeson, we're going to torture you to death unless you tell us where your daughter is, so we can go kidnap her. And he'd be like, okay, fine, torture me to death, because you know, because that would be the right thing to do.
Yeah,
but of course, in that movie, he's like, I'm trying to find my daughter, so I'm going to kill everyone.
Uh-huh.
There was like, you know, there's like a clearly defined goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, they introduced so many things and there was no payoff for any of it. And what they established, they ruined with the twist.
Well, and what is the goal of Ryan Gosling? Like a character, they should have something that they want. They should have something missing and some sort of obstacle they overcome. And I mean, he has all those things, but none of them are satisfied or even given the opportunity to be satisfied. And I guess they're trying to be nihilistic with it, but it's like, that's not satisfying.
Yeah. I guess that was kind of the point, that he wasn't satisfied, but as a movie that's not good. Like for the audience, it's just, it's just this weight.
Right. Cause that's what movies are all about. It's like, you know, you have a shitty day at work or, you know, things suck or, you know, like, you know, you want to go to a movie. You're like, oh, you know, here's a person. Because that's why every movie's follow the same thing. It's like, here's a person, they're in their normal life, something different happens, and they go through a bunch of adversity, and at the end, they're a better person because of it. And they get the girl, or they get the money, or something like that. And that's what you want to see in a movie. Like, so when you make something that's like ultimately unsatisfying from a character perspective, like Blade Runner 2049, it just doesn't resonate with people. And yeah, movie buffs might gush over the special effects or the sets, but as a story, it's pretty boring.
Yeah, and it doesn't hold up. And it's two different stories that don't get resolved.
That could be on the poster. Pretty, period. Boring, period.
Perfect.
Ship it. Yeah. What about his holographic girlfriend? Do you think did that have any point? I mean, she was basically like someone, you know, character for him to talk to, like a sidekick, I guess, right?
And I guess the point of it was so we would be sad when she died, but then she just dies and it's at a moment that doesn't really matter and she doesn't do anything to forward the plot at all. So I don't know. Maybe we're supposed to feel even more sad for Ryan Gosling.
That's true. All those scenes with her were pointless because again, I mean, well, it's trying to show like he has humanity. He wants something, you know, he wants love, whatever. Maybe he could have hooked up with the daughter, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, like, you can't show the character wanting something and then not giving them a story purpose in order to fulfill that need. So instead, you have all these scenes of Ryan Gosling talking to his virtual girlfriend, and then she goes away. And it's not like he's really affected because he's just a block of wood anyway. So it doesn't affect his decisions at the end. I guess she's like a copy of her and he's like sad or something, but
right. Yeah.
How does that character advance the plot? It's like,
it was a cool idea.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this robot society has gotten to such advanced points that they're needing human connection, basically.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that character doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, she probably could have, but, like, they could have involved her in the plot. Like, you know, there's something she knows that is a clue, or maybe, you know, maybe he goes to try to find her a replicant host body, and then that is a clue. You know, they could have linked that to the plot, but as is, it has no connection to the plot. I mean, all she does is she's someone on screen so Ryan Gosling can explain what's going on to.
To me, the whole movie was just, it was like a tour of directions the movie could have gone, and then it doesn't choose any of them and it ends.
Which is why it was kind of unsatisfying.
It's very unsatisfying.
So, not a masterpiece. Would that be your final verdict?
That would be my final verdict, yes. Definitely not.
I'm trying to think of movies of the same genre that I enjoy more. I would say definitely Steven Spielberg's AI. I would say Robin Williams in Bicentennial Man. I thought was a better movie about artificial life.
Yeah, for sure.
Battlestar Galactica, which also had Edward James Olmos. Ex Machina, just quite a few.
Ex Machina's great.
Yeah.
Also, even from the director's own catalog, Arrival is a far better sci-fi film than Blade Runner 2049.
Well, because it asks questions and it answers them.
Yes. Yeah, and you get the satisfaction of just the tying together of all these narrative threads, which in Blade Runner, they're just left completely untied.
And it has an emotional core. You have like Amy Adams and her dead daughter, which is fairly well integrated into the plot. You know, it's like, I guess, spoiler warning, is like the kind of core is like, would you have a child even though you know she's going to die at a young age? And her character decides to have that, even though it costs her relationship with Hawkeye.
And that kind of thing generates conversation after you've watched the movie, where Blade Runner 2049 did not. Because after Arrival, I was like, okay, if I knew how my entire life was going to be, I'd just kill myself, because there's no point of living that.
Like, yeah.
What's the point if I know all of it? There's no surprise.
Right. But again, yeah, you know, there
that's a different thing.
Yeah, but there was actually, you know, emotional things attached to it, and a character who was like missing something, and then she wanted more, and then she gets drawn into this, and there was a mystery that had to be solved about how the language worked, and, you know, you kind of went with the characters as they solved the mystery. Like, that was pretty much it. All they had to do was figure out the language, you know. They didn't have to like, find a slave orphan camp and then follow a wooden horse to a wood factory and then go to Vegas. And movies should have simple plots. They really should. And
I mean, just think about that pitch. You're sitting in the room and then the guy's like, okay, I've got it. So at the end, our main character, we found out that he's completely boring and has nothing to do with the plot. And then he sits on the stairs, dies, and then an irrelevant character has a reunion with his daughter. Cut to black.
The thing is, if you pitch that movie, no one would buy it. But since it says Blade Runner, they'd be like, oh, it's going to be visually striking. Like Rogue One, if you pitch that movie, no one would buy it. But since it has Star Wars attached, it gets made.
Right.
Yeah. Like, what was it? Like, oh, yeah, I remember, like, 2002, like Lilo and Stitch and Ice Age both came out, right? And since one was 3D animated and the other one wasn't, one of them made a lot more money, even though the story was garbage compared to the other one. And sometimes
Lilo and Stitch is a far superior movie.
Yeah, yeah. I watched that recently on a plane. I forgot how good it was. But yeah, but as long as you have like a brand like Blade Runner or Star Wars, you can attach that brand to a crappy story and it succeeds. So I guess that's the question. Like, would this story succeed as the original product? And if not, then it sucks.
Yeah, and with this, it's definitely not.
Right. But, you know, again, you know, everyone crying and writing articles about this movie not succeeding. It's a miracle that it got made. And it actually did pretty well, all things considered. So you got the movie, so shut up.
And it's a shame because I really liked all the director's other movies.
Yeah, it just seems like, well, it goes back to the problem with most movies. It had a really underbaked script. And it's like, well, the script sucks, but oh, look at these visuals we can come up with. And it's going to be beautiful.
Right.
All right. Well, any closing thoughts on Blade Runner 2049?
I think I've said my piece.
All right. Me too. Well, maybe we'll have you back on as another guest star in the future. Maybe after Last Jedi, a.k.a. Empire Strikes Back Again, comes out.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right. Well, hope you all enjoyed this podcast. Unless you're big Blade Runner fans, in which case you probably clicked unsubscribed, #RageQuitUninstall. And we'll see you next month.